Welcome to Transition, Gadgets 360's gaming and pop culture podcast. In today's episode, we are going to be talking about Far Cry 5. We have been playing the game, we have two people here who have reviewed the game, and we will be talking about all things about this, including the legacy of the franchise, its connection with India and how it's fared in India so far, and supposed price drops as well, apart from the games we've been playing this week. So first up, games editor Rishi Alwani is here.
It's too early for a price drop, but it's going to happen all the same, and maybe even earlier. Good morning, night, evening.
Yeah, and ultimate weird game enthusiast, Mikhail Madnani is also here.
It's never too early for coffee though.
Yeah, and I'm your host, Pranay Parab. So, let's start by talking about Far Cry 1, 2, 3, 4 and Primal.
Yeah, so funnily enough, Far Cry 1 wasn't made by Ubisoft, even though it was published by Ubisoft. It was made by Crytek, the folks behind the CryEngine and Crysis, also known for making Rise, which was the Xbox One exclusive. So Far Cry was one of their first games, and it was published by Ubisoft, who later bought the rights to Far Cry from them. And the tech used to make Far Cry, even though it was based on Crytek's own engine, was then leveraged to create what is now known as the Dunia engine, which is what Far Cry uses. That's your first India Easter egg to Far Cry because of the name of the engine. What is even fascinating was that when Far Cry came out back in the early 2000s, it was notoriously tough to find here. It was a PC-only game, notoriously tough to find, and you needed really good hardware to run it, which is kind of a running theme with games in the mid-2000s. They were quite graphically intensive, and they had a sense of immersion and scale that hadn't been seen before. The first game had more like a standard action-adventure feel where you're a mercenary who has to rescue scientists and one of your partners from this weird testing facility, which is in an island filled with other soldiers and mercenaries and monsters. It had a very, very weird and basically bog-standard story. But what was really nice was its approach to gameplay, where you could tag enemies, you could basically use stealth to avoid them, and, you know, use silencers and go amok. And a lot of the basic tenets of open world and emergent gameplay today stemmed from Far Cry and games of its time. So the first one was an interesting experiment all the same. Fast forward to 2008-2009, after taking their own sweet time with the engine and with the franchise, they made Far Cry 2. Now, between Far Cry 1 and Far Cry 2, there were a ton of side games, or a ton of re-releases of Far Cry. They re-released the game for the Xbox 360, they re-released it for the original Xbox, they released it for the Wii, and I think there was even a PS2 version, if I'm not mistaken. So point is, the game had its run across consoles. With Far Cry 2, is amusing because they took a darker approach to it, and it's kind of known as, for many people, it's the highlight, the pinnacle of the franchise, because it's one of those games where you can die of malaria if you don't inject yourself with quinine soon enough. So it had a very survivalist element to it. You're a mercenary in Africa. Things get real, real fast, and you find yourself on the hunt for an arms dealer, and it was quite a dark. Dark story, which pretty much cemented what we know about the franchise today. And that was amusing because when it came out, it ran horribly on everything. On the Xbox 360, PS3, PC, it ran very poorly. And I think it didn't even sell that well to begin with. But over a period of time, it got massive critical acclaim because of the number of systems and intricacies involved. So much so that there's still an active modding community around it. So the India availability on that one was a lot easier because the pricing was quite good. I think we were at $4.99 or $6.99 back in the day, which is a really good price point on PC. So it did well enough. But for India, the game came into its own with Far Cry 3, particularly because of the villain Vaas, who everyone seemed to love. He basically became the Far Cry equivalent of the Joker in a lot of ways. The timing of that one was interesting because it came out in December after every other game came out, but it did very well. Same situation with Far Cry 4, where, again, fine, you had the Nepal setting and you had rickshaws which were playing Bollywood music. But that one also did well enough, despite coming out the same day as GTA 5, or GTA 5's PS4 and Xbox One release. And in fact, Mike and I were at that midnight launch, and it was amusing because we heard some very interesting tidbits on how well the Xbox One was doing. Well, at that time, it was, I think, 60 Far Cry 4 versus 3 units sold on Xbox One.
60 PS4
versus. Yes, yeah. So that, and obviously Far Cry 4 also hit on PC at that time. And I mean, traditionally it's done well. But so if you look at the Ubisoft franchises in India, Assassin's Creed is undoubtedly the first one. Watch Dogs probably comes in close second. And maybe you have anything to do with the Tom Clancy label like Ghost Recon and Rainbow Six Siege coming in third. Far Cry is a distant fourth. But from all of them, Far Cry has the longest tail in the sense that it's not a game people will buy day one, month one, but they'll buy it year one. They'll play it over the year. They'll play it during a lean time. And it's done quite well, which is why Far Cry 5, coming to Far Cry 5, it's an interesting situation because when the game was first revealed, first there was a teaser behind before that where everyone assumed it would have a Wild West theme, like Red Dead Redemption, which never happened, sadly. And instead we got, you know, a more contemporary, and as much as I hate using the term, woke take on America. And it's done very well and very tasteful because it never uses the word religious, it never uses the word biblical. And it's, even though it's very cultish and it's very obviously portraying that, it's done in a very cool fashion. While it's a nice contemporary take, it doesn't feel as exotic as past games. That's the first thing that struck us with its reveal. But so that's where we're at. And one interesting thing to note is that I think from Far Cry 3 onwards, Ubisoft Pune has been contributing to the franchise. So a lot of QA for the Far Cry games happens out of Ubisoft Pune. In fact, Ubisoft opened its second India studio
in Mumbai.
Surprisingly, Powai of all places. I will never understand why. But
it's okay. A startup hub, bro.
On what? The rent makes it more like the startup no hub, but okay. There's a lot of Indian Indian talent that's worked on the Far Cry games over the years, and this one seems to be no less. I mean, Ubisoft Pune gets a call out in the credits, gets a call out even in the reviewer's guide for the game, which is fun to see. That's the newest one that's been out. Mike and I have been playing it extensively. We've been fortunate enough to even check it out pre-release. And so, Mike, what do you think so far?
Well, looks really good, plays really well, runs really well. The opening cutscene for the story sets a very interesting narrative and sets a very interesting tone for the rest of the game. The open-ended nature of how you can approach individual, like, you know, liberating stuff and, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Just basically...
Outposts.
Not the outposts, but...
Cults.
Yeah, just like... at first, I thought, you know, you'd just be able to... Like, I haven't played Far Cry 4. I've just played Far Cry Primal. And
what?
Like, yeah, I've not played
you
Far
played
Cry 4.
4.
It released the same day as GTA. Who the
it's
hell's going to
so
buy Far
good.
Cry 4?
So, in Far Cry 4, you could actually take a rickshaw and ram it
you
into...
You can do that in real life also, apparently, if you look at some parts of the cities.
Now. But you can take rickshaws and basically pummel them into enemy encampments and strapping C4 into them, jumping out of the last minute and watching things go boom. It's quite cool.
Just take an Uber instead. Anyway, no, so I haven't played Far Cry 4 yet, although we'll probably get around to 3 since we have Far Cry 5 Gold Edition, which includes Far Cry 3 Classic Edition, as they call it.
No codes on that yet.
Yeah, I think it's just going to like show up as DLC for the game or something like that, maybe. But having played only Far Cry Primal and like being super impressed by the visuals and that, like that was just unbelievable for a console, at least I think. It also ran really well and all.
Oh yeah, that's actually good you brought up Primal. Primal, in fact, from what I've been given to understand, did just as well in India as mainline Far Cry games do, which is shocking.
Yeah, shocking because like without the number, most people probably wouldn't bother and... given how muted the response was around release, it probably had long tail because it's almost sold out everywhere. Like, the limited edition was one of the few Ubisoft limited editions to actually sell out in India before release in pre-orders only.
Yeah.
Which is rare because, like, if you look at games like Assassin's Creed, some retailer will have a copy of the collector's edition. What is it called? The God's Edition or something for Origins. Something like that. They have, like... Ubisoft has like more editions of games than some publishers have game sales at this rate, but
Sea of Thieves.
Yeah, so like Far Cry Primal sold out really well. They did a lot of good promotion for that. There were a lot of pre-order bonuses and all. Like there was this nice saber tooth, paper opener, envelope opener and all, like in the shape of this old fashioned sword, I think, or something. But yeah, Primal was really good. Like super impressed by how it looked, and when we were playing Far Cry 5's on a debug PS4 at a preview event, I was like super impressed by how it looked. Like I thought okay, this is probably like, you know, when they showed off all the trailers, well, this is probably just like, you know, high-end PC footage. We'll get to the PC port in a bit because Rishi's played that also extensively. But yeah, looked really good, runs really good. A lot of it is fun. Like, I think Ubisoft's got another hit on their hands.
Yeah, but a slight disclaimer here. The debug units we played the game on were running off 4K HDR monitors. So obviously, yes, it looked a lot sharper.
But then this was a console build. It wasn't like, you know, playing a PC build at 4K HDR where you can put everything at max. So that was pretty like impressive because like when we had played it at IGX, it looked and ran pretty terrible.
Oh yeah,
honestly.
I mean, it was like
playing almost like playing a backward compatible game on Xbox One.
No,
I'd say.
Worse than that. Backward compatible games felt polished.
Yeah, so when we played that, like, you know, but then we had to give them the benefit of the doubt because when Watch Dogs 2 was initially revealed to us in a hands-off demo, it looked and ran like it had a lot of performance issues, but the final game was really good.
Hands-off demo means somebody else played and you watched?
Oh, yeah. So that's a thing. For those of you listening in for the first time and for Pranay as well, hands-off demos are a thing. Mm. And they're a thing for one simple reason. A lot of times, publishers and developers aren't too confident of the quality of the build.
Hmm.
So they're confident of their own guys playing it because they've gone through the demo a bunch of times.
Yeah, they need to like follow a particular path to show off the thing because if you try to go on the off-beaten path, something might happen. Like you saw Scalebound hands-off, right?
Yeah.
And we know what happened to Scalebound.
So
Microsoft went hands-off with that.
So, point is, and also controls may not be tweaked to the level they want it to be. So a lot of times, games will get announced. There'll be gameplay footage, but it'll be hands-off. So like at Gamescom, and at E3, a lot of times they'll have they'll just have hands off. So like, surprisingly, one of the games that was notoriously hands off was Fallout 4.
Hmm.
Fallout 4 was hands off. It was out in November.
Hmm.
They did hands off previews in September.
Hmm.
Yeah. So even though 3 months before, they didn't want anyone to play it per se. They would show it off, but they wouldn't let anyone play it. Mafia 3 is another example where throughout, I think most of its pre-release hype was based on hands-off footage. Rockstar does it quite extensively as well. I remember they had flown one of my friends down to Taiwan to check out the game on PS3, but they never let him play it.
Hmm.
They let him see it. They let him check out his observations, check out his take notes and all, but they never let him play it.
Hmm.
So it's a thing, and it's a thing that, I mean, over the years, it's become a little less, but it's still a thing none the same. So yeah, with Watch Dogs, it's essentially a hands-off impressions. Which is why we never covered anything around it because, I mean, yeah, it looks like Watch Dogs and it apparently plays like Watch Dogs, but we can't tell, so we're not writing.
Yeah, for all you know, it could be just cinematic footage, right? With the guy just pressing random buttons here and there.
You know what? That's actually happened before.
Yeah.
That's happened in the games biz before. There have been scripted demos where things like this have gone down. So you obviously don't want to touch that. But, coming back to what Mike said, Far Cry 5, it made sense to give it benefit of the doubt after playing it at IGX because, the past games have been super polished, with perhaps the exception of Far Cry 2. And it made sense from a gameplay component, every element was there. They didn't have enough time to refine the controls.
Yeah, like the gunplay and all, was lacking a bit. Yeah, it was lacking some feedback and all, and it kind of felt off, but then like, when we played that was apparently the E3 build. So that was already, like, I think a few months dated at the time. It wasn't even the build which people got to try at Gamescom from what we know. So, yeah, like, the final game is really good. Like, there's just, like, whatever. I think the only place people might need to, like, have some skepticism about it is, like, performance depending on the hardware they're playing. But we'll get to that.
Yeah,
right, we played it on everything.
Rishi, I think you spoke about the story.
Yeah.
Yeah, but progression is something that
it's really cool.
Touch upon.
So, okay, now, I get it. So, what is really amusing is when I told my friends that a new Far Cry game was out, I was met with the immediate barrage of typical Ubisoft skepticism for anything that's not Rayman, which basically means, oh, it's an open world game from Ubisoft, right? How many towers do I have to climb? Now, the reason for that statement, which they make, I don't blame them, is because, see, in an open world game, particularly Ubisoft's open world games, they all follow a similar template. At least they used to. So be it Far Cry, be it Assassin's Creed, you'd be thrown into this massive open world and parts of the map of that world would be cordoned off, would be which aren't visible until you climbed a tower and you basically synchronized with the tower so that you can get to know what's going on around it. So it's basically like in an RTS, when you send in that one unit to open up the fog of war, kind of similar to that, but for third person and open world games. So that's how most of them played out. That's how most of the Ubisoft games played out for the longest time. And in a way, you couldn't blame them because, you know, Ubisoft's the kind of studio which shares a lot of resources between teams, wherein one element Assassin's Creed uses will end up finding its way to other games like Far Cry, other games like Watch Dogs as well. So for them, it made sense. But from a consumer perspective, it got old. So which is the first thing people are asking, right? So, oh, do you have to do this to progress through the game world? But that's not the case here. Here, what you have is... So to dial back a bit, Far Cry 5 has you up against a cult called the Project at Eden's Gate. It's a doomsday cult run by a guy called Joseph Seed. Joseph Seed has three henchmen, or heralds as they're called, Jacob, John, and Faith. Now, three of them control three different regions of Montana where the game takes place. So now, in terms of progression, you don't have to follow a set path. You don't have to take out one then the other. You can take them. You can freely travel between each of their territories. You can freely do missions in any of their territories. And anything you do in each territory gives you resistance points. It could be anything from, you know, blowing up a silo to taking down a shrine to rescuing civilians to taking out an outpost. And all that counts towards progression. So it feels a lot more flexible. You're never capped or feel that you have to do one thing before you do the other. So in a way, it's really cool. And because of that, combined with the fact that Far Cry gunplay, Far Cry gameplay, and, you know, the controls itself are pretty good, makes it feel like a more flexible game. Makes it feel like you have choices in how you want to play through it. And that's what, to me, is a big deal here. Because if you compare to Far Cry 4, if you compare to Far Cry 3, with Far Cry 3 and Far Cry 4, it reached a point where your basic objective was to unlock different areas. And the way to do it was pretty much set in stone. You go there, find a tower, climb it, sync it up with your map, you have access. Rinse, repeat. Here, it doesn't feel that way. Here, it's like I can take a plane from one territory, go over to the other territory, along the way, figure out what silos are in the region, figure out what shrines are in the region, blow those up. And it just makes it a lot more, feels a lot more natural. In the sense that, if I look at it this way, the last few games felt like a third person shooter instead of an open world game. Because you felt straight-jacketed by the way you approach things. You have to do things in a very specific fashion. Here it feels like a proper open-world game. So,
yeah. Okay, cool. That sounds good. Another thing which I want to know about is the co-op mode in this game.
Yeah, so I think...
There are a few things to keep in mind with the co-op mode. I haven't played Far Cry 4 yet, but Far Cry 4 had this friend pass thing apparently where if one person owns the game, he can invite someone else and they can join in and play. In Far Cry 5, as far as we're aware, both people need copies of the game.
Yes.
And, suppose, say, Pranay and Rishi are playing co-op with Far Cry 5. Pranay will join Rishi as a friend for hire. But the sad thing is, even though Pranay owns the game, progress, whatever he does in Rishi's game, is not going to actually be saved on his save file. So this is kind of like, I hate to use this, but like it's kind of like Dark Souls where like when you do this stuff, you have to like do it for both sides. So instead of like, you know, just letting people play the campaign co-op together and like doing it in one go, they want people to play it twice because one person will not have the progress saved.
So
the other person will have.
So essentially Far Cry 5 is the Dark Souls of politically incorrect games.
No, that's like the worst headline bait I've ever heard in my life. And I read Polygon this morning.
Oh boy.
I'm not too happy with how they've implemented that, but yeah, that's the thing with co-op. And also it's obviously online only. There is no offline, there is no split screen co-op for this thing. There are quite a few online components to Far Cry 5, although the campaign can be played fully offline, which is always good. There's arcade mode, which has a lot of stuff which you can like get from other games to like level edit stuff and like whatever.
Oh yeah, that's good you brought up arcade. In fact, that's one of my...
Because I haven't tried that yet, so...
I have.
Okay.
Okay, long story short, if you're buying Far Cry 5 for the arcade mode, if you're planning to buy it for the arcade mode, I would recommend stepping back and waiting. And for those of you who are unaware what Far Cry Arcade is, it's essentially a level editor built into Far Cry 5, which lets you create cool stuff. Now, these level editors have been a thing in past Far Cry games. We've had them in 3, we've had them in 4. And they have been, I mean, there's usually a niche hardcore community that's gone ahead and made missions for them. Now, the missions you can make with Far Cry Arcade are single player, multiplayer, cooperative, and you can do a bunch of things around it. However, and what's interesting here is this is, I think, one of the few times I've seen Ubisoft actively promote it prior to release and saying that, hey, you can push stuff in from Assassin's Creed Black Flag. You can push stuff in from Watch Dogs 2. You can create a bigger, cooler game with elements from other Ubisoft games. I mean, in theory, it sounds really epic. But in practice, at least on the Xbox One, I haven't tried it out on PC yet. And that's something we'll be getting to in a detailed story later this week. But at least on the Xbox One, the issues we've seen involve... the menus are a bit of a mess. It has a nice radial menu, but then being able to... But placing elements like textures, like AI, like... water. It's a little tough to do all that through the menus and systems. It seems a little cumbersome, and at least on console.
Yeah, is it better on PC, you think?
I have a feeling it will be, because with PC, they've retooled the UI. I've played the single player campaign on PC, and they've retooled the inventory completely. And in fact, they retooled it to work with a PC setup.
I think this reminds me of how Halo 5's Forge map editor... they actually added keyboard mouse support to the Xbox version, and they brought that component to PC so that people could, you know, use their PC, because it's easier to like make these things with keyboard and with mouse specifically, and then use it in the Xbox One version. That kind of pissed off a lot of PC gamers who wanted Halo 5 on it. But yeah, they brought the multiplayer map editor to PC so that people can do it, and the same things can be playable on Xbox One. So yeah, that kind of reminded me of that. Maybe they should do something like that, because... both console manufacturers keep saying that we are all for more accessibility and we are all for more options in games. So maybe this would be one situation where Ubisoft could have added mouse and keyboard support to this particular aspect of Far Cry 5. Because like games like Fortnite just have native keyboard mouse support on both consoles. So
yeah, because to me, that's a point of concern. I mean, because there's so much potential to be unlocked here that isn't going to go anywhere anytime soon.
And also the fact that like Far Cry 5 is going to sell way more on consoles than it does on PC, because Ubisoft games traditionally are like, first is PS4 with the lion's share. After that is like Xbox One, and then PC is below that. Usually, at least I'd say for Far Cry and Assassin's Creed, that would be true. Rainbow Six Siege, PC is probably taking over now. But
yeah, that's because PC has the option of the cheapest version of Rainbow Six Siege, starter kit. And consider the fact that Ubisoft has promised a 10-year life cycle for Rainbow Six Siege. Yeah, that's kind of good to be expected, that most people would be playing it on PC. But yeah, I mean, Arcade is a bit of a sticking point for me right now, because it's very easy to also reach the AI cap. So I tried messing around, created a map, thought, okay, let's put a number of as many VIP class enemies, the highest tier of enemies, not VIP class, the number, as many boss enemies as possible. And I think I put in 16, and I got an error that said AI limit reached. And I'm like, guys, come on, man, you're killing me here. Is this the glorious future, console future you've embraced, at least on the One X? So to me, I was a little bummed out with that. And then even when trying to save it, it was like, oh, your AI is too close to each other. Please space them out so you can save it. And I'm like, really now? I thought I could muck around, and I apparently can't. And but what's really cool, though, is that some of the user-created stuff is really nice. Those who've managed to wrap their heads around it have created some really interesting things. So, like, there's a cool submerged level, semi-submerged level that exists, where, you know, you have to take out this outpost with one of four loadout options. And there's a jet ski you can use to do that, and a bunch of enemies. It's really tough. You die once, you're dead. And it's pretty cool. So they have a couple of good maps, at least right now. And I think I have a feeling this is going to be Far Cry's games as a service component notched up to 11. So let's see how it pans out. But right now, I'm a little tentative about this specific aspect of the game.
All right. So since you spoke about the glorious future that consoles are bringing in, why don't you tell us about the graphics, how they compare between the PS4 Pro, Xbox One X, and PC?
So here's where it gets interesting. Now, as you all know, Far Cry 5's marketing deal is with Sony, which basically means every trailer, at least from Ubisoft and obviously Sony, will be saying that it's, you know, with the PS4 Pro, player on the PS4 Pro, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, best
blah,
on PS4 Pro. But the only thing which is actually going to matter in terms of content is there's going to be some DLC which is exclusive to the PS4 version of Far Cry 5. We don't know whether this is timed exclusive for a year or whether this is permanent exclusive, because... in a lot of cases, like in Destiny 1, Destiny 2, even Watch Dogs 2. Watch Dogs 2, it was 30 days early. Even the Call of Duty games which have marketing deals have DLC early. With Far Cry 5, we have no idea yet.
Yeah, and traditionally, when Ubisoft's done these deals, we've seen timed exclusivity. I mean, the only time we've seen exclusivity for which was basically exclusivity to a console completely was, I think, with Black Flag or one of the earlier Assassin's Creed, where there was a 30-minute DLC that was exclusive to the platform. But then that aside, those have seemed to have gone out of fashion. It's more or less more likely to be timed exclusivity. And it's something Ubisoft's also done with Microsoft with The Division. The Division got DLC, I think, 30 days early on the Xbox One. So, yeah, it's possibly going to take place in that kind of capacity. Now, as for performance, to be honest, the PS4 Pro and Xbox One X versions are a bit similar. I mean, are almost similar. There were 2 minor issues wherein texture pop-in, as in the sense that as you walk closer towards an object, the elements around it, like the
basically
trees and grass.
Like the draw distance is not as high as it should be, so you can tell that these things are loading. If you want like the best way to tell or the best way to see these things happen in a video, you can look at No Man's Sky, because at launch it had very low draw distance. So like while walking, you could literally see grass and like foliage and like even those alien animals and all just show up like a few feet ahead.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like, it's not that bad over here,
no,
but that's
not
the best way to see how these things are. Even like Final Fantasy 15 on consoles has very low draw distance compared to the PC version. So that's like, these are the games you should use to see these things.
Yeah. So, I mean, from what you've seen here, it's more pronounced on the PS4 Pro. At least I've seen it more pronounced on the PS4 Pro versus One X. The PC version also has this, but not as bad. So the PC version was actually pretty, I mean, that way it was pretty more competent in that department. But then what's interesting to see is that in terms of grass, in terms of effects, in terms of reflections, it ran pretty well across the board. Whether you're buying it on the Pro or One X or PC, you'll be taken care of. It's in a good place. Again, obviously, the caveat with PC being that, yes, you'll need a good enough machine. I'd recommend something in the range of a 1060 and an i5 with at least 8 gigs of RAM if you want to play at 1080p. Mix of medium and high. As for us, we played. But the thing is, what's amusing with PC is that the issue of diminishing returns is extremely prevalent. Our test rig was basically a Ryzen 1800X, 16 gigs of RAM, an M.2 SSD, and a Vega 64 GPU. That's basically one of the highest end pieces of hardware you'll get right now. And we were able to do 4K. Yes, 4K was simple. But it was 4K at 40 FPS. And that's kind of disappointing in a way. Because this is with AMD's day one drivers. The game is optimized for Ryzen and optimized for Vega. So it's a little disappointing that we could only eck out 40 FPS ultra, everything maxed out. So that's a little disappointing there. Basically, the hardware doesn't seem to go as... doesn't seem to take you as far as it could. That's what bugs me a bit. Because if you compare it, And see, the visual quality is there. It's good. There are 1 or 2 rough spots. But then here's the thing, right? To build a machine of that magnitude to play Far Cry 5 or any game like of that sort, you're spending, I mean, in excess of, you're spending close to a lakh. And that's what bugs me.
And with current market, probably more.
Yeah. With current market, a lot more. And that's what's disturbing to me, is that it doesn't seem like your bang for buck on PC hardware is going as far as it should. Because let's be honest, what was interesting is that at 4K, we were able to get 40 FPS, which logically, you should be getting at least 80-85 FPS at 1080p, you know, because you're going twice the size. You're going 4K is twice of 1080p, right? You should be getting double at 1080p. That wasn't the case. We were probably maxing out at 70-75 FPS at 1080p. And it didn't look as good as the Pro or One X versions at 1080p. And that's also to do with the fact that if you're playing the game on a 1080p display, the game on PS4 Pro and Xbox One X renders itself at 4K internally, but then displays at 1080p, so gives you a sharper output. So it's called super sampling. And it looks really good that way. It's a sharper image, but that's not the case here at 1080p. In terms of support, it's got some really nice options on PC. You can tweak your FOV, you can tweak HDR, you can tweak, you know, textures, anti-aliasing, shadows. There's a lot of options there. They're nice to play with. There's even a built-in benchmark. But, I mean, to be honest, while the bells and whistles are there and there's a nice custom UI that takes full use of mouse and keyboard, it just doesn't feel as impressive as it could be, because you don't get the performance you'd expect.
I think one thing to note is PC is the only version that has 60 FPS. Both console versions, they've gone for 30 FPS locked, and... while we haven't played on the base hardware, we'd expect it to be locked given past record, but like whatever, there'll be a story on Gadgets 360 mentioning how it performs across platforms. But
yep.
Yeah, if you want more than 30 FPS, you have to play this on PC. So yeah that's the thing, because on both Xbox One X and PS4 Pro, they've gone for higher resolution over higher frame rate.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the thing.
And honestly, and that's where the sweet spot is, right? On PC, the sweet spot we found, given the hardware we have, isn't 4K, isn't 1080p. It's the middle ground of 1440p, 2560 by 1440. And over there, we were able to get a good, stable 60-65 FPS. It looked good. It looked good. I mean, not as good as 4K 30, but looked good. Looked sharp enough, competent. And it gives you enough headroom, because when things explode in that game, your frame rate takes a bit of a dip. And it was still playable and a lot fun. But, I mean, yeah, if you want 60 FPS with current hardware, that's what you're going to get. Then again, it's early days. Ubisoft is known to optimize its games post-release quite well. We've seen that with Assassin's Creed Origins. And yeah, for those of you wondering if the game uses De Novo, yes, it does. So...
Is De Novo, like, oh yeah, and one more thing to note, since this is a Ubisoft game, the only place you can buy the Steam version is on Steam. So, and Ubisoft traditionally, when they have discounts, when you have like, you know, copies bought at retail in some regions which still have physical media on PC, every code you buy outside Steam is going to be a Uplay code. You cannot get a Steam code outside Steam. That's how Ubisoft works.
Oh, thanks for reminding me about Uplay. Yes, and there's another thing to keep in mind, particularly with Uplay. Now, I mean, I'm the sort of person who likes to give PC clients like Uplay and GOG the benefit of the doubt because they're not Steam. It's a kind of disturbing that a platform such as the PC that prides itself on openness has majority of its sales on Steam, which creates an effective monopoly. So, you know, I was pretty cool playing it on Uplay. I have Uplay installed. I kind of like it because it seems to work fine for me. Until day before, when I started installing the game. So what happened was, long story short, I couldn't even download Far Cry until I uninstalled my earlier games, cleared my cache off on the Uplay app, and basically had to uninstall the app and reinstall it, because there is a bug with Uplay that prevents you from downloading a game. It's falsely marked as a network issue, wherein apparently you have to flush your DNS, but that doesn't help you with anything. The only way to fix it at the end of the day is to just uninstall Uplay and reinstall it. And in my case, that meant having to uninstall Assassin's Creed Origins and Splinter Cell Blacklist. And I think, and Splinter Cell Conviction and a couple of other games exactly. And that was pretty annoying. So the only way I could get the game to actually download was by reinstalling Uplay and download, deleting everything and reinstalling Uplay. So that was annoying. But what was really nice though is that despite that, the transfer the files from one machine to another was just a simple copy paste. So they've made that slightly easier, thankfully. But it really bummed me out that I had to scorch earth my entire Uplay install just to get the game to run. So that.
And all right.
Yeah, so that's something to keep in mind. You may have issues with Uplay.
Cool. So now we get to the interesting part, which is the price drop and which edition to pick up. So I believe both of you got the Father Edition with the limited edition.
No. Okay. So, now, disclaimer. All right. And I know some, and hopefully no one from Ubisoft is listening to this. If you guys are, I apologize in advance, but it's the bitter truth. Do not pre-order games. Do not pre-order the most ostentatious edition possible. Look, I get it, man.
You should pre-order Yakuza though. And like, so, okay, basically, if there's a game which you are surprised is coming to India and it's a Japanese game, pre-order that, because there's a chance you're not gonna get it later. If there's a price for an edition of a game which is releasing, which is much lower than it is abroad, you might wanna get it. But if it's the same price, you don't need to pre-order it because you're not missing out on anything. Pre-order DLC codes are almost always garbage. They are almost always absolutely useless. They are items which you probably get within 15 minutes of playing. You'd get better stuff. So yeah, that's something I'd agree with. But yeah, there are a lot of games which you might want to get because you're not going to... You might want to pre-order because you're not going to get them anymore. Like, look at Life is Strange Limited Edition. It's already sold out on Xbox One.
Yeah, but there are all of four people who'd play it on Xbox One. So
yeah, hey man, maybe they got in three units.
In this room. But no, rule of thumb is, for something as big as Far Cry, do not bother pre-ordering. I mean, even the same, and that goes across the board, be it Far Cry, be it Call of Duty, be it FIFA, be it Assassin's Creed.
So my guess is that the price sort of fell by 50% or something.
No, it didn't. It didn't fall yet. But, okay, so firstly, there are multiple editions of it coming to India also.
Yeah.
The best value edition, if you want to buy something day one, is the deluxe edition. Because it has a deluxe pack, which is usually $10 worth of some nonsense DLC, but it comes with an actual map slash poster, and it has a soundtrack CD with different box art for the game. The gold edition is basically just a standard game with the season pass. I wouldn't recommend getting this because, like, you don't know whether you care enough about the game to get the season pass, and you still have the option to buy it later. You're not losing out on much. And obviously the father edition, which is like the collector's edition, which has the statue and stuff like that. But like, a lot of retailers are going to not have the deluxe edition and have only the standard edition, which means you don't get the physical soundtrack CD or the map or the deluxe pack. You just get the standard game. So, and what usually happens with almost every single AAA game in India, after a month or two, price drops by about 20% almost everywhere, just through, like, you know, limited lightning deals or stuff like that.
Yeah,
you know, like, if you don't care about getting the map, the CD, or any of the DLC, and just want the game as cheap as possible, you can easily wait 2 months or 3 months. There's no rush to play it right now. There's a ton of stuff releasing. In fact, April is empty except for God of War. Use that for your backlog. There's a lot of stuff. You can save money if you wait just a bit. If you want it discounted on Steam, you're going to have to wait a lot longer because, like I said, Ubisoft rarely discounts stuff on Steam because you cannot buy Steam codes outside. So while you can get it cheaper on PC through Uplay, the Steam version is likely going to remain at the super high price given Indian regional pricing of $3,499 for the standard edition.
Yeah, so if you... but then, however, that being said, the Uplay version will go on sale much faster. And it's something we've experienced with Far Cry 4. Wherein I managed to pick up a key on Uplay for Far Cry 4 a little less than a month from after release for $30. So, I mean, yeah, you will get a better deal down the line. And that's something to keep in mind. And sometimes that down the line can be a lot sooner than expected. Because traditionally, what we've seen with Far Cry 3, with Far Cry 4, they've been price drops. Mike is saying 2 months, that's the outer limit. We've seen it fall steeper, like 1.5 month in, maybe even less, depending on availability, depending on supply. So yeah, I mean, I would recommend waiting if you can, because your patience will definitely be rewarded. I mean, it's a good game, but then if you can get it for a little less, in just a shorter amount of time, yeah, just do that.
I just say, like, if you're looking at getting the physical stuff with the deluxe edition, buy that now. Otherwise, you can wait for the game. That's what I'd do.
Yeah,
well, I think we can move on to the games we've been playing this week. And I think I'll go first. So the game I've not been able to stop playing is Yakuza 0. So now I finished the main story.
Is this like episode 10 of the podcast or something? Because it feels like we've got back in
yeah.
2017. Oh, things 2017 kids remember.
Yeah, but that's what you said just now, right? I mean, if you wait for a short time and you pick up a game, you will be rewarded. So
there's
got
a difference between short time and a year. But okay.
And yeah, you kind of like almost paid what we paid when we got it day one. Yeah. So...
All right, so what I did was I finished the main story, then I finished that Real Estate Royale mini game in Yakuza 0.
Wait, is this Battle Royale with Real Estate?
No, it's not Fortnite.
Can you buy guns and loot crates?
No, you can't.
Weekly challenges, yeah. Battle Stars, XP points?
Yeah, no,
Gamescom
nothing like that.
Special edition loot crates of Yakuza?
No, you can definitely buy like some random properties here and there. Some of it include like theaters and, you know, stuff we can't talk about on the podcast. But yeah, it's
you
not
mean
really
like Upper Juhu. Oh,
no. Okay, so after finishing the whole Real Estate thing, I got that Dragon of Dojima fighting style, which is fun and all.
Red
but
color
I,
one.
Yeah, but I realized that, you know, maybe the Real Estate minigame was not that good. Overall, like, apart from some things, like, you have to play mini games with the 5 billionaires in Real Estate and you have to defeat them in those. So apart from those mini games, the Real Estate part itself was nothing. It's just go there, invest money, and then you get returns. That's it. So it's very good if you want to make a lot of money, and if you play a couple of sub stories in the game, you can transfer money between Kiryu and Majima, like, easily. So you can make like 1 billion plus yen from Kiryu with just like one full payout from the Real Estate, and like that keeps happening every like 10 minutes or so, you get like a payout in the game, 10-15 minutes. So yeah, you can make 1 billion yen easily, and you can change character after you finish the game in the premium adventure mode. And then you change character, go play as Majima, like run his business, then come back as Kiryu, make 1 more billion, just send that money to Majima, and then that way you can progress faster. Then, secondly, what I've been doing is I've been playing the Cabaret Club Czar minigame, which is some sort of a, you run like a cabaret club essentially, which is a bunch of people coming to your club ordering stuff, and you have to pair them with the right kind of hostess, and it's a lot of fun. It is like, it's initially when I started that game, I was like, okay, what nonsense is this seems like complete crap. But then when I kept, the more I played it, the more I realized that this game is way more intricate than it looks. So I've been playing that, hooked to it. I think I'm like about 50% through it now. After I finish it, hopefully I will be able to call it quits, because I just can't seem to stop playing this game. And in between, to just give myself a bit of a break, I started playing this game called Flower on PS4.
You should have just played it on iPhone.
I know it's available on iOS as well, but I had the collector's edition physical copy of Journey, so Flower and one more game are there in it. So yeah, I started with Flower, I played for about an hour, like just collected random flowers, relaxed a bit, and yeah, now I think there's one trophy in that game which requires you to stop playing for like a week and then come back, so I'm gonna play it maybe next Sunday. So that I get that trophy. Unfortunately, no platinum trophies in Flower, but yeah, easy enough to get like a full 100% completion on that game, unlike Yakuza 0, which, by the way, like, even if I try my best, I don't think I'll ever get 100% completion. So I'm going to call it quits whenever this Kabare game is over. And basically, thanks to Mike and his obsession with rhythm games, I've finally learned how to play that Disco Maharaja game in Yakuza, and now I'm getting like 3 stars on like 2 or 3 songs. But yeah, that karaoke game is just beyond me. There is no way I can like get a really good score. The max I've managed is 78, and that also gets me like a rating of Karaoke Bozo or something, which is still better than Tone Deaf, but yeah, far from what Mike gets, which is like 87, 90 and whatnot. So yeah, I think that's about it for the games I've been playing. What about you guys?
Okay, so been playing quite a few things on
Attack
Switch
on Titan 2.
No, I already played that.
Okay, why not Attack on Titanfall 2?
That's EA buying them. Been playing a lot of Fortnite on both iOS and PS4. Was going to play it on Xbox just to see how it runs on like base hardware. But yeah, Epic has not released it in India. As with a lot of games on Xbox, like indie or big publisher, like Sonic Mania, still not available in India on Xbox Live for some reason. So yeah, I've been playing Fortnite. It's super polished, like a lot better than PUBG, like still. Been playing some of that, not bought anything in-game yet, don't think I will also, but playing that on PS4. Also been playing, more of DMC HD Collection, and it's terrible, like it's just worse than I expected in almost every way. Yeah, so having never played these on the PS2 or PS3, you know, after playing DMC Devil May Cry and a bit of Devil May Cry 4 Special Edition, I kind of expected like that level of quality. But this is basically feels like I'm running an emulator with things getting upscaled, and in a lot of cases, it feels like a worse version of Bayonetta with worse controls, worse camera angles, and worse everything. So yeah, not too happy with that. Been playing Shantae and the Pirate's Curse on Switch. It's a port of a game which released on 3DS first, then Wii U, then PS4, PC and all. It's a 3DS game remade for HD screens and all. Really good, but the highlight is definitely how they've implemented HD Rumble with sound effects in the game and with music. So this is basically an action platformer where you play as Shantae. There are like 4 games in the franchise. They're available pretty much everywhere, so you should check those out. And yeah, that's all I've been playing basically.
Man, that wasn't too long.
Sadly.
Yeah, why have you gone back to Xenoblade Chronicles 2 and like...
No, waiting for the big patch which arrives at the end of this month. But yeah, like I have been playing Splatoon 2 here and there a bit. Tried going back to some other weapons which I used to use before in the game, but still sticking to Aerospray. But yeah.
Cool, okay.
Aerospray, really now? Yeah, so I've been playing Splatoon 2 as well, and...
What do you use, the roller?
Dualies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, best. Especially when you're close range, it's really good.
In fact, because you have that invincibility,
exactly.
Dash or whatever, dodge, sorry.
Yeah, I feel like a squid version of Max Payne playing that game. So yeah, basically Splatoon 2, quite a bit of that. Been playing DMC HD Collection as well. And all I will say is, do not spend your money on this. Do not give Capcom anything on this. If you've got a copy, refund it. Because this is not worth spending anything. I think this is perhaps the most disappointing game I have played this generation. it is essentially a straight up PS2 port with slightly better looking visuals. It is lazy. It is literally, this shouldn't be on sale. Like, do not.
Like, if you have $30, buy Dragon's Dogma Dark Arisen instead.
No, if you have $30, just donate it to charity. Do not buy this game. It is bad and you should feel bad for playing it. Just like I felt bad for playing it, because it's really disturbing that in 2018, an HD collection is a kind of, according to Capcom, an HD collection is the kind of thing where when you go into your menus, it's in 4:3 with glorious pixelation. And everyone has 16:9 displays. It's letterboxed. Every single element of this game outside the core game itself is letterboxed, low res, and pretty much garbage. So do not bother with Devil May Cry. Capcom hasn't. You shouldn't either. And I've obviously been playing a lot of Far Cry 5 and still dipping back into it just to, you know, mess around and see how far I can take things in terms of, seeing how the AI reacts to what you do. That aside, I've also been playing a bit of Fortnite, particularly on iOS, more iOS than on PS4. And it's fun. It's a lot of fun. And while, yes, Epic Games hasn't released it on Xbox One X or Xbox in general.
In India.
The company has yet to explain why, and that's something we should know hopefully this week. So let's see when that happens.
But that's not the first Xbox game this has happened to. We've seen quite a few, like, so in the last 1 year where this has happened.
Like, even indies like Firewatch are not available in India.
This is where it gets interesting. Until now, it's been okay not to see an Xbox One game in India. But I think there's enough for another very special episode of the podcast that we should delve into, particularly given Microsoft India's alleged, hey, we're back and we're present in 100+ stores in India. Because trust me, there have been others, high-profile titles, Metal Gear Survive being one of them, that never saw physical release, despite having discs available world over. And Sea of Thieves as well hasn't seen a physical release anywhere.
But that I can't blame them for it.
No, because it's a first party title.
I mean, you
title.
Can. Like, yeah. Sea of Thieves has a higher chance of selling than Super Lucky's Tale, which made it here.
Exactly. Mm. So, it's obvious that something...
And, like, more so than those stupid $14.99 Kinect remasters, which they did,
Disneyland Adventure.
Yeah, that I agree, about yeah. That stuff. But I was under the impression that Super Lucky's Tale and Sea of Thieves are about the same quality.
If you go by our reviews, yes. Though yeah. I would think the Super Lucky's Tale is a bit better. Especially when I was comparing notes with Akhil.
I kind of
the
game would
for
rather
us.
Play Super Mario Odyssey with my hands handcuffed than play Super Lucky's Tale. So, yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, that's one thing to keep in mind. But I think there's enough for that for another episode.
So I think that's about it for this episode of Transition. And we will see you with another episode next week. As always, you can write to us via podcast at gadgets360.com. Or you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube and Instagram at gadgets360. A future episode of this podcast will have us answering all of your questions related to gaming. So if you have any of those, such as which console to buy, which game to play, which is the best game, whatever it is, just send them to us right away at the email address mentioned earlier or via social media. Use the hashtag #TransitionPodcast. The music for this episode comes via Magnus Solai Paulson, whose album PPP PPP is where the tracks are from. Thank you so much for listening.